Hi, welcome to Eyes on Southeast Asia, the premier podcast on foreign policy, security, and economic issues of Southeast Asia, brought to you by Foreign Policy Community of Indonesia, which is the largest foreign policy group in the nation. Today, we're going to have a discussion on Southeast Asia's response to President Joe Biden's foreign policy speech, specifically from Indonesia and Vietnam. Joining me here today are Ambassador Ngurah Swajaya and Dr. Nguyen Hung Son. Hi, Ambassador Ngurah, and hi, Dr. Nguyen.
Hi.
Good. Let me just explain who they are. Ambassador Ngurah Swajaya is Director General for American and European Affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Indonesia. He's been in diplomacy for about 30 years. He was ambassador to ASEAN, to Cambodia, and to Singapore. Dr. Nguyen Hung Son is Vice President of the Diplomatic Academy of Vietnam, and he's Director General of EC Institute also. And prior to this position, Dr. Nguyen served at the ASEAN Department of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and he served in many capacities, and he was also a member of the Vietnam High-Level Task Force delegation, which negotiated the ASEAN Charter in 2006-2007. So it's really great to have them speak in our podcast today. And let me begin with the first question. You know, we just heard President Biden's foreign policy speech, which he made at the State Department on 4th February this year. And he said that America is back, diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy. Let me hear, what is your 2 or 3 minute general response to President Biden's foreign policy speech? Pak Ngurah, maybe you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Pak Dino. Yeah, I think it was very interesting to hear the speech of President Joe Biden at the State Department. I think that is really an indication in saying that, of course, the U.S. is going to be back in the global stage together with other countries as the collective leadership of the international community. He was saying that multilateralism will be further strengthened. And of course, the most important thing is diplomacy will be back also in the U.S. And that was the reason why the first office that he was visiting since he was inaugurated as a president was the State Department. I think there is a special message that he would like to make there. The special message is that, of course, they will count on the State Department's diplomats in engaging the international community, in bringing back again the values and the norms that the U.S. is embracing, as well as the U.S. want the other international community to follow. I think this is something that most of the international communities are waiting for, because they are certainly do not really have any clear idea as to what will be the directions of the U.S. Foreign policy in the past 4 years, but I think this is a very good indication. But I'm listening to the speech, the whole speech that he made in the State Department, basically is saying that of course you can count on the U.S. leadership, you can count on the U.S. is bringing the values that we are all embracing. But at the same time, I think the message is very clear that he will be not really dealing with a whole lot of issues, but I think he will start with some of the critical issues or strategic issues for the U.S. If I may say that, take for example the transatlantic alliance that has already been not really very active in the past 4 years. He would like to reactivate that. But the most important thing for the international community is that the U.S. is coming back again to the international organizations. So yeah, that yeah. is what people are anticipating from this administration. But knowing the situation domestically, I think he will have to be very realistic, and the international community at the same time has also to be very realistic. So we have to manage the expectation.
Okay, good. Dr. Nguyen, your two-minute take on President Biden's general speech.
Well, I fully agree with what Pak Murad has said. Plus, I think the President Biden's speech is welcoming and reassuring to the international community. It's welcoming because it is what is expected from a superpower, taking diplomacy as the main instrument of its foreign policy rather than anything else, focusing on smart power rather than on hard power. To exert its interest, emphasizing working with their partners and allies rather than going it alone, and focusing and re-emphasizing on the role of international institutions as well as rules as vis-a-vis going unilaterally. So it is a welcoming step in bringing back the United States to the international stage. It's reassuring because there was some concern before Biden took office that the Biden administration could be preoccupied too much with domestic politics, and therefore it will bear some costs on the implementation of its foreign policy. But the Biden speech clearly stated that no, it is going to have its domestic agenda, but foreign policy is still very much a priority of the new administration, and it's evident in the very first few weeks of the administration that it is that Biden gave out such an important speech. So all in all, I think it's a good start for the Biden administration's foreign policy wise. But of course, we have to recognize that the new administration is still in the learning curve. There will be a lot of things happening that is going to impact the Biden administration's foreign policy. And we just can't take these words as it is. And we still have to watch for what the administration will actually do to verify if they will be putting the meat where the mouth is.
Yeah, you know, I find it interesting that he mentioned the theme global leadership. The U.S. will resume global leadership, assuming that U.S. had retreated from global leadership. Is there a feeling in Southeast Asia that in the past 4 years, U.S. global leadership had actually declined significantly, that it has to be returned, as Biden had said? Yeah. Pangura, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of how the U.S. has engaging the partners all over the world, I think I was mentioning about collective global leadership. So certainly this is something that is, we don't really feel it because in the past 4 years, of course, the Secretary of State have been visiting the region many times. And emphasizing the role that the U.S. is trying to play. But then, as you remember, in the past two East Asia summit, I think the U.S. President was not even represented by the vice president. He was represented by, a low rank, the chief of the director of national security, engaging with the ASEAN leaders and also the leaders here in the region. I think that is a message that is need to be strengthened even further. You know, we would like to have, when they are saying that they are trying to engage the region, they are trying to cooperate with the region, they have to really show it by showing a commitment at the highest level. So it was unfortunate to see the situation in the past two East Asia summits in the region. We don't have the U.S. president, even the vice president participating.
Mm. Dr. Nguyen?
Well, I think there's this very popular narrative there in the United States that the U.S. leadership is declining in the global stage and that U.S. powers is in decline. And that is a very common narrative ever since the junior Bush administrations. And since then, every administration has been working in one way or another to regain US global leadership, albeit in very different and contrasting ways. I think the essential message in the Biden administration's, in President Biden's speech, that US is going to work to regain its leadership is, on the one hand, is just a reiteration of that very well main objectives of US foreign policy that is undertaken by every administration. Secondly, it's a message that the path that the US is going to take is going to be different from the previous administrations, which the Biden administrations often criticize, that is costing US world reputations and leadership's role. The fact is that the US roles and leadership has always been under challenge. And that is not necessarily because US is underperforming. Yes, it is underperforming in some ways, but it's also trying very hard in different ways across the administration. But the fact is that there are other powers out there which is competing with the US, and US have to deal with it. So, I think I don't see any major difference just by having read this statement that the US is going to work on its global leadership. We'll really have to look into the details.
By the way, I want to ask you, Dr. Nguyen, I hear from reliable sources that President Trump was more popular in Vietnam than any other Southeast Asian countries. He certainly was not popular in Indonesia. Can you explain why that is? That would be interesting to know, yes.
Okay, well, I'd say for one reason, because he visited Vietnam twice.
Ah, okay.
One of the reasons, and there's no direct conflict of interest between the US and Vietnam at the moment. And therefore, many Vietnamese who are asked, and most of them are young people who are, very forward-looking. Many of them are Western-looking. So they look at the States, the United States, as a power out there, which brings a lot of opportunities, economic opportunities, opportunities with regard to the rule of law, the rules-based order. So there are a lot of positive views out there. That might not reflect the whole of Vietnam's population's views towards the United States. If you ask the old people, the veterans, they might have a different views. But nevertheless, we do recognize an increasing popularity of U.S. President Trump in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Indeed.
In contrast, President Trump never visited in Indonesia, and President Jokowi also never visited the United States. I hope this is something that's going to change under Biden. But I just want to bring a little bit back the discussion to U.S. global leadership. Ambassador Ngurah, if you can just maybe share the Indonesian view, Southeast Asian view of what do you like to see from Biden administration in terms of its global leadership? What kind of U.S. leadership would you like to see on the global stage?
First, I think, I have also to say that for Indonesia, we are having a very good relations as well with the U.S. under the Republican administrations. But when we are talking about what is our expectations in the region, certainly we would like to have the U.S. administration walking the talk, so to implement what they are promised to do. But listening to the speech by President Biden at the State Department, very obvious ASEAN is missing there. And Indonesia.
I noticed that too. Yes, we noticed.
It's also missing there. And even when he was talking about the issue of Myanmar, so he was talking about how to bring the bipartisan in the U.S. Parliaments rather than talking to the leadership here in the region. But certainly, I think in the G7 they are talking about other mechanisms here, which is certainly something that is promoted by a number of countries in the region, but not ASEAN. So very unfortunate. But at the beginning of the administrations, he appointed the Indo-Pacific coordinator. That is also raising a lot of expectation. What are they going to do? And it happens to be the person who is the appointed.
Kurt Campbell, yeah.
Kurt Campbell is very familiar of the region, and he's very well known in the region. But you know, as Nguyen mentioned earlier, remain to be seen. You know, walking the talk is very important. So when even we are talking about the issue of Myanmar now, of course, international community are expecting ASEAN to play the role, but it was not mentioned in the President Biden statement. So again, you know, cautiously, of course, we are expecting the U.S. is engaging the region even more, you know, because we agree that the U.S. is a resident power here, and the U.S. is also having a very crucial role in the region. We would like them to be here in a dialogue together with all of the countries in the region, in the context of the Indo-Pacific, for example. Well, the G7 mentioned about ASEAN outlook, but then again, lack of detail in terms of what do we expect from that kind of statement. So, yeah, this is still at the early stage, but then there are a lot of skepticism as well. You know, there will be not that advanced in this first year, perhaps in the second year. But for us, certainly we would like to have the U.S. playing a very crucial role here in the region.
Yeah. Dr. Nguyen, what kind of leadership, U.S. leadership, does Vietnam should Southeast Asia want to see in Washington, D.C., in the Biden administration?
I fully agree with Park Mura that we hope to see U.S. President turn up in the upcoming East Asia Summit, if it were to be held physically, and I hope it will be. Secondly, I hope that ASEAN vocabulary is going to appear more prominently in U.S. foreign policy statements and actual agendas with the region. Greater engagement with ASEAN as a group, focusing on ASEAN institutions as a as an evidence of U.S. recognizing ASEAN centrality and U.S. Focusing on multilateralism. We hope that U.S. agenda with the region is going to focus more on diplomatics and economics agenda rather than just defense or hard security. So a greater, more comprehensive agendas and approach towards Southeast Asia is going to be very welcoming. We talk a lot about U.S. missing a trade investments strategy in its Indo-Pacific world strategy and in its dealing with Southeast Asia. We hope that the U.S. is going to look into that. And we hope that the U.S. is going to also respond more effectively in dealing in supporting ASEAN's immediate needs and concerns, such as vaccines, such as economic recovery. On the longer term, I think a very good source of U.S. soft power in the region, which is, I would say, in the long term, will play very important in U.S. leadership, is its entrepreneurship, its technological advancements, its education. These are the areas that the U.S. is doing a lot with the region, but has not been often talked about. And we hope that the U.S. is going to focus more on that as a good source for its leadership and soft power.
Yeah. Well, for the benefit of our audience, the six countries that President Biden mentioned in his foreign policy are Myanmar, China, Russia, Yemen, Germany, and Saudi Arabia, right? He didn't mention a lot of other countries as well. But I find it interesting that the first country he mentioned was Myanmar, right? Should the U.S. Take the lead on Myanmar? And do you agree with sanctions, the imposition of sanctions on the current military government in Myanmar? Maybe I'll go to Dr. Nguyen first on this. Yeah.
Well, I think the reason Biden's speech mentioned Myanmar is, first of all, because it's about an election, which will resemble what the U.S. president had just gone through, and not a smooth transition one. Secondly, it's the first crisis that the new administration had to deal with to test its democratic values and the ability to handle the democratic values versus its geopolitical interest. And thirdly, the democratic administrations were the one who handled the democratic transition in Myanmar in the previous Obama administrations. And obviously, President Biden were in one way or another, or at least his officials were in one way or another involved in that process. And therefore, they are somewhat familiar with the Myanmar democratic transition. So therefore, Myanmar naturally comes in and draw in the Biden administration's attention. That's not to say that U.S. policy towards ASEAN is going to be primarily focused on Myanmar. I don't think so. So we should avoid overinterpret that gesture. Secondly, whether or not U.S. should work on sanctioning Myanmar, that's for the U.S. policy makers to decide. But I think it would be beneficial for U.S. to work in close consultations with ASEAN, because U.S. and ASEAN share very common interest on the issue of Myanmar. Both U.S. and ASEAN wants a peaceful and stable region, and Myanmar is a very important component of that. Both U.S. and ASEAN are for ASEAN centrality. We want ASEAN to play a central role on the issue and not being sidelined. And we also are very concerned and sensitive on geopolitical implications of such an issue. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it would bode well for the U.S. own interest to work well with ASEAN and not take his its own actions or solutions without regarding ASEAN's interests or without closely consulting ASEAN on an issue very critical to ASEAN's interest.
Mm-hmm. Pak Murah?
Yeah. Well, you know, Pak Dino, I think he also mentioned some of the countries in the region, but of course, not ASEAN, not Indonesia, you know. And I think I'm trying to look at this in a more positive side, you know, because one cannot deny that the presence of ASEAN here in the region, at least there was an absence of conflict tensions in the region for the past 50 years. And that is the contribution of ASEAN. So it's, you know, it's less issue for them as compared to, take for example, what is happening in Yemen. And I think the reason why President Biden mentioned about Myanmar, because it was just, you know, before he made a speech, then the issue of Myanmar came up. And that was precisely, he put the emphasis on that. And also the reason, as Dr. Nguyen mentioned earlier. The other thing is that, of course, I remember when President Obama was attending the ISIS summit in Bali back in 2011, that was the first time ASEAN is making a decision to allow Myanmar to be the chair of ASEAN 2014, because we thought that Myanmar has already been part of the responsible member of the ASEAN family. And we believe at that time that, you know, there's no point, there's no way of point of no return, you know, we are arrived at the point of no return in terms of democratization. So this is really a big challenge. You know, this is the first test that the administration has to deal with, especially here in the region, knowing, as I mentioned to you earlier, that the ASEAN has already been playing a crucial role in maintaining peace and stability in the region. So if whether or not you have U.S. also has to take the leading role here, I think it has already been made very clear that ASEAN should take the lead here And that was the reason why our foreign minister has already been traveling and consulting with so many different leaders. And for us, certainly we would like to have our family back as a member of the democratic society. And this is very important. Concerning the sanction, I think I'm, you know, for the one I've been speaking at length before the Obama administrations with the US think tank in saying that, you know, sanction doesn't work. And also in the past, you know, there was a trend like when one of the countries in ASEAN, which is only one country, and you know, and the attitude of a certain regime, it is not good also for you to punish the whole ASEAN. That was what was happening before in the past. So we don't want that to have that repeated again. And certainly we need to you know, restore again democracy back in Myanmar. We do not want to fall again in that in the situation you know, prior to the democratization process in Myanmar, because you know, we have been working very hard on that. And as to the question about sanction, I don't believe the sanction will work. Although, you know, this is going to be very selective, but an engagement, constructive engagement, should be something that we need to you know, promote further here in the region.
Yeah. I think that's one of the main differences between American foreign policy and Southeast Asian foreign policy. Americans are very used to using sanctions as a foreign policy tool, whereas Southeast Asian nations generally don't do so. Let me bring the issue to Asia. I noticed in President Biden's speech, his Asia policy has not been clearly spelled out yet. Yeah. And this begs the question, from your viewpoint, from Southeast Asia viewpoint, what do you like to see in terms of the U.S. Asia policy? Maybe I'll begin with Dr. Nguyen. Yeah.
Well, I think I somewhat mentioned this earlier. We hope that Asia and the Indo-Pacific in general continues to be prominent center focus of the new administration's foreign policy. We hope that multilateralism, true multilateralism, is going to be the main vehicle for the U.S. to achieve its objectives, and therefore working with institutions like ASEAN, but also working multilaterally with its partners, while to implement the Indo-Pacific strategy, is also should also be the target, the instrument.
Does that mean a new round of pivot policy or rebalance that was undertaken by Obama?
Well, I think the terminology is less important than the substance. Indo-Pacific strategy was the continuation of the pivots and the rebalancing anyway, despite with a different name. And now the Biden administration is calling it somewhere else, a secured and prospered Indo-Pacific, I believe. But I'm yet to see any major change in the policy objectives or instruments or the way they implement it. So I hope that the new Biden administration is going to have clarity and transparency in the way it is going to implement the Indo-Pacific strategy. And as I and Pak Ngura mentioned earlier, we hope that ASEAN will really be prominent in the new administration's agenda, and they will actually focus on ASEAN by attending the summits, by supporting the ASEAN institutions and undertake its foreign policy using the ASEAN's institutions. For example, its maritime cooperation in the region should be undertaken rather than unilaterally or through its bilateral relationship, more on the multilateral side through the ASEAN mechanisms, such as by supporting the ASEAN's capacity to better enforce the law of the sea, for example. So multilateralism should be the high, and we hope that that's the going to be the major change of the new administrations compared to the previous administration's policy towards Asia.
Ambassador Ngura, I don't know if you know, President Biden has talked a lot about democracy summit, that he will, it will be one of his first foreign policy projects if when he assumes power. I wonder if the U.S. has officially invited Indonesia to join the democracy summit, and if Indonesia is invited, will Indonesia attend the democracy summit led by President Biden?
First on Asia, Pak,
yes, please, please, yeah.
I think you know, it's really you know, now we are already in the Asian century when we are talking about economic growth and also economic stability. This is where the growth is happening. So if it's not mentioning about Asia, I think this is you know, a big mistake, and that was the reason why he's spelling out Asia. But of course, Asia, of course, is a big region, one of the prominent players in Asia is, of course, ASEAN. And I think we need really, you know, the concrete implementation of what his Asia policy means. So it will not be preoccupied with only one issue, which is in relation to the geopolitical dynamic here in the region. It's not going to be only that, but certainly there are more other countries and more other institutions that they can engage in Asia in order to really maintaining peace and stability, as well as promoting economic growth. Now, on a democracy event that is announcing, I mean, I think he is, this is one of the events that the Biden administration, in addition to the climate change event as well, that the Biden administration has already been mentioning. But there's no specific in terms of, you know, when that event is going to be organized. But if this is even going to be organized, I think we just anticipate that, of course, how can they miss Indonesia as the third, you know, largest democracy in the world, not to be invited? If that is the case, I think, you know that Indonesia is annually also having this Bali Democracy Forum in bringing all of the democratic countries in having an annual meeting here in Bali. So I think, you know, this is something that, you know, we share common values with the U.S. in our bilateral relation. One of them is certainly vibrant democracy. So We don't hear any specific in terms of when this is going to be organized. And even we don't hear anything yet in terms of when the state secretary is start to travel, you know, because I remember in the first Obama administrations, the Secretary Clinton, the country that she was visiting is an ASEAN country, in addition to also the other countries which has a very, you know, close relation with the U.S.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about China now, U.S.-China. In his speech, Biden said that we will confront China's economic abuses, counter its aggressive coercive action, and to push back on China's attack on human rights, intellectual property, and global governance. It seems that the stage is set for a competitive, even probably conflictual relations between Washington and Beijing. I want to ask both of you if you think there will be intensified U.S.-China competition in Southeast Asia, right? And do you think it's possible for U.S. and China to cooperate in Southeast Asia? And if so, on what? Yeah, please, Dr. Nguyen. Are you worried of more intensified competition between Beijing and Washington?
Well,
US-China competition is structural and it's there to stay. And that's a fact well recognized by both parties in the US. And therefore, we can't just expect that the US-China competition is going to go away or is going to ease out just because the new administration takes place. We think that while US and China continues to comprehensively compete, and US major foreign policy objectives, and this has been made very clear by the Biden administrations very early on, that it is going to continue to compete with China at the positions of strength. And therefore, we do anticipate that US-China's frictions rivalry is going to continue to be a major feature of the Indo-Pacific geopolitical scene. Secondly, the US is going to further, selectively try to decouple from China, and that is going to affect Southeast Asia economies and production chain as well, because many of our economies are too deeply intertwined with both China and the US. And nevertheless, I think the Biden administration's policy is still going to focus on China's policy and not Chinese people. And I think this is a common feature of the US-China's policy, both by the previous administration as well as this administration. Having said that, I think that the Biden administration also said that they are willing to cooperate with China where it is in US interest to do so. They've cited a number of areas such as climate change, but I believe that there are many other areas which the US and China can work together, such as on DPRK, on the Middle East peace process, even on the issue of Myanmar. There are rooms there for US and China to work together and to coordinate for the sake of their common interest, which is peaceful and stable Myanmar. Even on issues of maritime, there are room for collaborations between US and China, such as building codes to prevent accidents or unannounced, unplanned encounters at sea or in the air, which is becoming more likely with increased military activities of both sides in the Indo-Pacific arena. And therefore, I think that there are rooms there for greater cooperations between the two superpowers, and not all have to be bad and competitive.
Ambassador Ngura?
Yeah. Well, I think what the U.S. is trying to do in terms of the engagement with China, I think it was made very clear that China is the strategic rivalry of the U.S. And of course, they don't want to be defeated on a number of issues, like technology, for example. But certainly, the tone is softened as compared to before, and they are an indication that the trade war remains to stay. But certainly, we are anticipating that there will be some sort of engagement and negotiation is going to take place, where President Biden mentioned about diplomacy is back. I think diplomacy will be the leading, instruments that the Biden administration is trying to do to engage with China. But as a strategic rival, of course, for the countries in the region, we would like to have more certainty concerning the engagement between the U.S. and China, despite many disagreements they may still have. But I think there's a good indication as well. At least they are saying that they will be able to work on the climate issue, for example, and also on other multilateral issues. So the most important thing for us, like what ASEAN has already been spelled out in the Indo-Pacific outlook is the interactions, is the dialogue, you know, rather than action and also counter reactions. That is not going to be very healthy. But certainly, the competition remains to be there. But what we need to see is that both are engaging in a dialogue, and also in the dialogue, which is also you know, initiated by ASEAN. Take, for example, in the East Asia Summit, I think they can also meet there, as what they did also before during the East Asia Summit. Both leaders can also, you know, having their meeting and coming out with at least, you know, some agreements that will also, you know, comfort the other countries in the region. But of course, the announcement that they may not arrive at an agreement on some issues, but then at least dialogue is taking place. We do not want to see, you know, activities in terms of more intensified military activities, perhaps in the region, and that will certainly very, very risky. So we would like to see more interactions and more dialogues taking place between the two, despite the fact that they are, remain, you know, a rival in the geopolitical setting here in the region.
Okay, so now let's talk about the Indo-Pacific, which, as we know, has been a key foreign policy concept under President Trump, and also before that under President Obama as well. There seems to be every indication that President Biden will elevate the role of the Quad. Yeah, what is Southeast Asian perspective on this? Because there's no Southeast Asian country in the Quad. Does that mean that the Quad will lead the Indo-Pacific discourse, and is Southeast Asia okay with that? What is your comment on that, yeah. Dr. Nguyen?
Well, I think the fact that the U.S. agreed under the Trump administrations to work in the Quad setting, despite their being not very favorable to multilateral settings, shows the importance, nevertheless, of working with its partners in the region. And therefore, we do anticipate that the Biden administration's having emphasized working with its partners is going to further proliferate the role of the Quad. Now, that is good for working in multilateral setting. That is good for transparency in the region. And that is good so long that they don't turn this mechanism into an anti-China club. And I think it should not be, because the countries in this club, the Quad countries, do not share a common views on the purpose of the Quad, if it is to deal with China. So we should not encourage the U.S. to work on the Quad to turn it into an Asia NATO and anti-China. Instead, I think the Quad should be encouraged to collaborate, to deal more specifically with a broad-based agenda. It should be encouraged to open up for collaborations with other countries in the region, even with ASEAN, in an open, inclusive, and transparent manner, in order to deal with mutually recognized issues in the region. Secondly, let me speak a little bit about the Biden administration's policy towards the Indo-Pacific. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the strategy towards the Indo-Pacific actually started with the Obama administration. So it is natural that the Biden administration is going to follow up and continue with this policy. I think the policy is going to continue because the concept has started to take root in regional politics. It is well recognized in the region. Many countries, including ASEAN, have had their views or outlooks on the Indo-Pacific. And now even the European countries are increasingly shaping their policy towards the region using this concept. And therefore, the concept is going to stay, and the new administration is going to build on to this concept in order to shape its foreign policy. Now, in terms of the policy implementation, we have seen that they have put the best, the administrations have placed its best people on Asia to work on the Indo-Pacific, such as Kurt Campbell. And they have undertaken activities inconsistent with what they have laid out to be their priorities in the Indo-Pacific, such as the continuing implementing the putting focus on the Indo-PACOM and implementing freedom of navigations operations. So I think the Indo-Pacific is going to continue to be a priority, and the Quad is going to be quite an important instrument for the Biden administrations to implement the strategy.
Yeah. Ambassador Ngora?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was very interesting in the last Quad meeting. They mentioned about the importance of ASEAN centrality. They also, one of the ministers was saying that they also mentioned about the importance of the principle that sets out in the ASEAN outlook on, you know, Indo-Pacific. So this is a recognition of the centrality of ASEAN, the prominent role that ASEAN should play in the context of the geopolitical dynamic here in the region. But as to your question, Pak Dino, you know, what ASEAN thinks about Quad, I think, well, you know, it's a meeting between some like-minded, and they discuss certainly issues. We know where the direction is. And of course, what we want to do is that, as they also mentioned in the statement in the Quad meeting, that they are recognizing the centrality of ASEAN, recognizing the importance of engagement here in the region by using the ASEAN initiative mechanisms. And I mentioned to you earlier about the East Asia Summit. I think that is, still. The main ideas that is floated in the Quad meeting, but I think when they have a meeting, they will never also make a joint statement in terms of the Quad common position. But we know where the directions of Quad is, and that is the reason why I think. I don't know if individual countries of ASEAN has already been approached to join Quad, but I think for us, ASEAN and all of the mechanisms that we have created should be the forum for us to engage the geopolitical dynamic here in the region. Now, as regard to the Indo-Pacific strategy, certainly, Biden administration trying to emphasize that as one of the priority, even establishing the Indo-Pacific coordinator. But I think the way we see it, there's no significant shift yet as what the Indo-Pacific strategy that the U.S. is trying to do here under Biden administration. Mm. The way I look at the European is also talking about Indo-Pacific, certainly, still related to the Asian century. This is where the growth is. But in addition to that, I think there is a sense, the way I see it, there's a sense of they cannot really count anymore everything on the U.S., engaging here, how they will engage here in the region. In the past, of course, they will, they will depend on the U.S. hard power here in the region. They will only, engage in terms of the soft power diplomacy. But then we have also heard about the statement by some of the European countries in saying that they will also try to send regularly their military to the South China Sea, take for example, to exercise freedom of navigation. But the way I see, more and more European, especially the big European countries, having their own strategy on Indo-Pacific, I think this is also some sort of a sentiment that we will not be able to count on the US, because that is what they experienced perhaps in the past 4 years. But we are welcoming the strategy that is already been announced by some European countries, and I heard that European Union is also working toward some sort of common policy on that. But I think the elements of those strategy is happen to be in line with that of ASEAN. Certainly for us, the principle that we are adhering to in the ASEAN outlook and in the Pacific remains there, and this is remains the guiding principle for us to engage with external partners on how we will be able to maintain peace and stability here in the region, but at the same time also to tap the potential there are, because now we are already in the second year of this COVID pandemic. People, countries are starting now to talk about how do we recover the economy. And I believe that the economies here in Asia, also ASEAN, will recover faster as compared to other region. And there was also a very interesting phenomenon, Pak Dino. When we have this trade war and also the pandemic started, so we realized that the global value chains should be diversified. And that was the reason why I think where ASEAN can also play a role, where Indonesia can play a role, where Vietnam can also play a role here. We should not allow in the future that the disruption or because of say trade war, because of the pandemic, then it creates a situation where there are even competition in order to get the supply of masks at the beginning of the pandemic, if you recall that. So that is how the region will play its important role, continue playing an active role. And even when the situation in Myanmar is happening, I think immediately without being requested by external parties, Indonesia together with ASEAN countries are starting a process where we will be able to bring the situation to normalcy. That is then supported by the international community, including also the US and the UN. So that is how we see the Indo-Pacific. I think this is still going to be the most dynamic region, and I think the most vibrant region. But of course, we still have problems. But then we still have a mechanism where we can talk about problems in order to find a solution.
Okay, let's go back to ASEAN, because I find this fascinating. And the fact that there seems to be an attention deficit in Washington previously towards ASEAN, and Ambassador Ngurah referred to the U.S. was not represented at the high level at the ASEAN summits, and there has not been a U.S. ambassador to ASEAN in recent years. So, I guess my question is, what do you think the United States should do to re-energize its relationship with ASEAN beyond just showing up to ASEAN summits and beyond appointing an ambassador to ASEAN, which I think they have a nominee already? Yeah. So what should the U.S. do to re-energize their relationship with ASEAN? Yeah. Dr. Nguyen first.
I think aside from attendance, showing up at regional summitry, appointing an ASEAN ambassador, I think the US should work on clarifying and transparentizing its policy and its engagements in the region, both regionally and bilaterally. It should also be sensitive on demanding or asking or expecting too much from its Southeast Asian counterparts in its rivalry with China. ASEAN has often been very sensitive in taking its positions with regard to issues pertaining to US-China rivalry. It doesn't want to send the wrong message, nor does it want to choose sides. So the US should understand that and show its understanding in its engagements with the region. I think it's also good for the US to focus more on doing things that it has traditionally been doing very well in the region, which is promoting its sectoral cooperations with countries in the regions, supporting ASEAN in its health cooperations, in its educations, in its capacity buildings, technological training, and so on and so forth. These are very fruitful long-term aspects of US-China, Southeast Asia's cooperations, which often less talked about in US handling of the region. US investments, trade and investments in the region should also receive a focus and should be re-energized and strategized and bring it into par with other elements of US Indo-Pacific strategy, particularly the defense and security aspects of the strategy. We need to have a free trade talk with the US, for example, and bring the US back to the trade agenda on the region. US investments in the region also is something of key expectations from Southeast Asia. The US is by far one of the very significant foreign investors in the ASEAN region, but the US government often do not talk about it as much because it considers US investments as a private sector thing. But ASEAN considers the US, even if it's a private sector, still is a component of US engagement with the region, and the US government still can do things to promote and facilitate US private sector's investments in the region. And this is also something that ASEAN expect more from the US. In general, I think what ASEAN truly expect from the US is a broad-based, comprehensive agenda towards Southeast Asia rather than a biased and one-sided strategy with too much focus on geopolitical and geostrategic aspect and too or inadequate focus on the development and economic side.
Well, thank you for that. Well said. Dirjen Ngurah, your view on this, and of course, I recognize that you were ambassador to ASEAN as well from Indonesia.
Yeah. Please. Yes. you know, the first step is certainly appointing the U.S. ambassador, because I know that the U.S. was the first dialogue partner countries that has appointed the dedicated ambassadors to ASEAN, and the U.S. was persuading other countries, other dialogue partners, to also follow suit, and that was the U.S. leadership before. When the first time the dedicated ambassador was appointed here in the region for ASEAN. Number two, of course, the ASEAN meetings, they need to really show up and not only sending messages but engaging directly with the leaders here in the region. The most important thing is that, of course, ASEAN, including Indonesia, would like to have the U.S. continue to play an active role here in the region as part of the solution here in the region. So I agree with Dr. Nguyen before that certainly it should not only be linked to the geopolitical rivalry, but how we will be able to develop dialogues here, inclusive dialogue, including involving all of the parties in the region on issues of our common concern. it should not be issues that is too sensitive for one or two countries in the region, but at least, you know, departing from commonality, that we will be able to really develop, you know, promote the trust that has already been facing a deficit in the past years before. In addition to that, certainly we would like to have the engagement in the region on many issues, including also, you know, investment, trade, as well as technology. I think technology is, we have to admit that, you know, the U.S. is one of the leaders in technology. We would like also the U.S. engage the region on technology, not only by saying that don't use this technology, don't use that technology, but, you know, we are left with no options here. So I think this is something that we need to promote, and we need to also promote people-to-people contacts. But I think the most important thing is that, you know, let's hear one another, let's exchange our views, not coming with the attitude that, you know, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, I want you to do this. If not, then I will not going to give you this, and I'm not going to do. I mean, that is not the attitude that we would like to have. We would like to have as engagement as a partners that will certainly bring mutual benefits to all. And I think that is the kind of engagement we would like to see. But this is perhaps still early to make a judgment. I believe that soon, and I trust that they are in the process of nominating ambassadors. And at the same time, I think we are hoping to hear, you know, Secretary of State announcing that the first trip that he is going to make is also here to the region, you know, and engaging with the leadership here in the region. By doing that, I think it will, you know, really reassuring for us after, you know, a number of years that we don't know where is the direction and what is the policy that we are going to, you know, face in this kind of interactions. So that is our hope, and we are still very confident, as what President Biden mentioned in his speech. Of course, he may not want to say, you know, about the whole things. That is going to be too ambitious, perhaps. You know, but then, of course, I believe by what the Biden administration has already been doing, like, you know, appointing the Indo-Pacific coordinator, and of course, the coordinator is someone that is familiar to the region. He knows how to engage with the region. He knows where our position, where ASEAN position. I think that is a good sign. Again, we will continue in saying that, you know, you have to be present here in the region as part of the solution, as part of the conversation that we are that we have to continue building here in the region for our common, you know, benefits. And Asian century is already here, and I think it cannot be neglected. And this is where the recovery will be much faster as compared to other region, and the dynamic will be here. And in this dynamic, certainly, we would like to have a true partnership that we can develop, you know, with major players all over the world in order to maintain peace and stability here.
Okay. Dr. Nguyen, you mentioned earlier about the U.S. smart power or soft power. I want to ask you, which part of the U.S. soft power or smart power you wish to see most in Vietnam or in Southeast Asia? The education part, the culture part, the technology part? Yeah.
I think first and foremost, I think I expect to see the power of U.S. diplomacy, the ability to go around and convince people by talking to people, by understanding people, and by narrowing the gap of understanding between people, between countries in the region. That's the first and foremost thing that we expect from a true smart power. power of diplomacy. Secondly, the second aspect is the power of rules and norms. We expect the US to promote international rules, international norms, and use it as a instrument or as the emphasis to build the rules-based order. So instead of forcing countries or asserting its interest forcefully, we hope that the US is going to work with allies and partners to strengthen and solidify the rules-based order through international institutions, one such as ASEAN, which is very strong at promoting international norms and rules in the region. Thirdly, we hope that the power of its culture, the way of the cultural way the United States often use to do about its things can be promoted through the people-to-people exchange, through greater interactions between the people in the US and the countries in the region. And thirdly, and finally, I think US can promote gender equality, the tolerance between different religions, different cultures, as another way of creating communities and bringing communities together. That can be an emphasis of U.S. smart power as well.
Ambassador Ngura, same question to you. I'm sure you mentioned education because we have quite a few students in the United States.
Yeah, I think this is very important. You know, education is very important part, you know, because this is about the younger generations and how the younger generation are engaging in each other system, understanding the system in each other countries, and also engaging with their fellow young generation. And this is something that we need to, have the engagement more. In addition to that, certainly in terms of trade, we would like to have, I just learned that the USTR just confirmed now by the Senate. And you know, what we are trying to do is, you know, Indonesia was the only country last year in Asia that has the extension of the GSP facility. And we would like to certainly working very closely with them, including also possibility of identifying some sort of a limited trade agreement where we will be able to facilitate both trade in accordance to the target that we are trying to achieve together. The U.S. investment is also very important. And I mentioned earlier about technology. Technology is certainly something that we are going to have in the future. And the U.S. investment in terms of technology here in the region, they have to also understand the potentials. In Indonesia, we have the largest number of tech unicorn. We have also the creative minds, that really they can work with in order to really develop these potentials. On other issues, of course, we are trying to continuously engage the U.S. on a defense cooperation. I think defense cooperation is very crucial. As you know, Padino, you were in Washington, D.C. before. I think this is very crucial for us, and we would like to have the U.S. Continuously having a very intensive engagement with Indonesia in terms of defense. So those are the number of issues that we are trying to promote under the Biden administration.
Ambassador Ngura, Dr. Nguyen, thank you so much for joining our discussions today. It's been such an interesting and excellent discussions. I learned a lot, and I'm sure all our viewers enjoyed it very much too. This is Dino Patijalal, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to share and subscribe Eyes on Southeast Asia on your favorite streaming platform. Follow FPCI social media for more information about our activities, upcoming events, and programs. See you.